This is the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast with your hosts, Chris Speer and Andrew Wilkinson. Each week, we'll be speaking with food entrepreneurs and people in the culinary industry. The following episode is one of our COVID Zoom sessions. If you're interested in learning more about our organization dedicated to helping people build and grow their food businesses, look us up on the web at chefswithoutrestaurants.com and .org, and on Facebook and Instagram at Chefs Without Restaurants. Now, enjoy the show. This is episode 47 of the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. On this episode, we have Matthew Townsend from Jug Bridge Brewery. Jug Bridge is one of the newer breweries in Frederick, Maryland. We discuss some of the ups and downs he's experienced since opening, many of which are due to COVID-19. His business was closed briefly for upgrades, opened back up, and then had to pivot exclusively to take out crowlers. This weekend, the brewery was allowing indoor seating at 50% capacity, though that doesn't come without its own challenges. As with most businesses right now, there's a lot of uncertainty about the future, and we're going to continue following along to see how things evolve. Thanks to this week's sponsors, Tyler Wright, Danny Spletter, Ron Krieger, Cafe Bueno, Little Fig Bake Shop, Maryland Bakes, and the Savory Spoon Catering Company. If you want to support the show, our Venmo name is CHEFWORESTOS. If you enjoy the show, have ever received a job through one of our referrals, have been a guest, been given complimentary Chefs Without Restaurants swag, or simply want to help, it would be much appreciated. Feel free to let us know if you have any questions. Thanks so much and have a great weekend. All right. Welcome, everyone. This is Chris with the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. And this week I have Matthew Townsend of Jug Bridge Brewery. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on the show. Long time no speak.
Yeah, really. It has actually been a while.
So for all of our listeners, if you don't know, Jug Bridge was where I was previously recording my podcast when I used to have guests in studio, as you will. We would sit in the brewery and interview our guests. So I wanted to have Matt on for a while. We've talked a little bit about his background, and I wanted to share with everyone. So I guess, why don't we kind of get started maybe in the beginning? So you now have a brewery. Do you have a background in food or working in food and beverage? How did you get to starting a brewery?
So obviously as a kid, first job was working at a little pizzeria shop. You basically as a busboy, sort of doing a little bit of salad prep and some plate prep and stuff for actual meals. So yeah, started doing that as a kid. Then kind of moved into, sub shop sort of, which obviously went to various different kitchens and stuff. Yeah, I just really enjoyed working with food. Something that just comes natural for me. I enjoy cooking. I definitely do have a little bit of experience. I wouldn't say like any kind of high profile culinary experience, but I can say I definitely worked in a few kitchens.
How did you get started in beer? I mean, now you have a brewery. Did you always enjoy drinking beer from, I guess we'll say, the legal drinking age? I mean, is there a beer that jumps out at you that you remember really being blown away with and then just thinking that you wanted to have a career in beer?
Actually, it's a good question. I can't say that there was really particularly like one. Well, no, I take that back, actually. Back then, when I first started drinking beer, it was oatmeal stout. Oatmeal stout was like kind of our go-to. And it just, I guess, must be a really easy beer to make that wasn't always necessarily too popular, but it was always just, I don't know, between me and a few friends, always really enjoyed a good oatmeal stout. So from there, it just kind of really sparked our interest in trying to brew it ourselves. Not to mention just where we were at 21 was really when the craft brew industry really started to take off. But there wasn't obviously nearly as many breweries out there that back then. We had a few. We had our name, big name ones. But as far as like local shops and stuff, like you didn't have five or six breweries in each town. You may even find one in the state. You know, it wasn't like there was that many, but there was they were starting to become popular. But what was really more popular was a lot of people were doing a lot more homebrew. So what we were doing is we were able to use YouTube, obviously, go from there and learn more about the craft beer industry and stuff. Because, you know, again, it's not like you just sit down and say, hey, I want to learn about beer. Where's the class or whatever? You know, like there's culinary classes and stuff. You know, if you really want to focus and learn about the craft beer industry, you kind of got to dive into it and get your hands dirty. At the same time, you know, the best that you have is, you know, there's some literature, but there wasn't that much. You know, Charlie Papasan, he was really one of the biggest ones. There was sort of a couple other, you know, books out there. It was How to Brew by, I think it was named James Palmer or something. But, you know, slowly but surely other books started to become published through the years and stuff. And that's what really helped me learn more about the craft. At the same time, you know, all my friends are in the industry, so we just, you know, we exchange information, share each other's heartaches and experiences, and so that way we all learn from each other, and it's, you know, it's really build what the craft brewery industry is today into what, you know, what makes it so amazing. So
yeah, you and I are similar ages. You know, for me, I grew up, my dad drank Old Milwaukee out of a can, right? Which I don't know that anyone thinks is a fantastic beer. So I didn't drink in high school or anything like that. And I definitely didn't drink beer, but I had tried some of his and it was totally disgusting. Not anything I would want to drink, right? And I just remember going to college. I've grown up in New England. So you obviously have Sam Adams, one of the forefathers, not only of the country, but in the beer industry, right? And I remember the first time someone gave me a Sam Adams Boston Lager, and it was like mind-blowing. You know, I had never had anything like that. I didn't think beer tasted like that at all. And I just started to go down the rabbit hole there. So that was, you know, in the mid-90s there when I first really tried my first beer. And, you know, we were still in the infancy back then, right? And I remember like taking the leap, like Magic Hat was the next thing, and trying the number 9, which is the apricot or something like that. And that was, you know, my first kind of craft beers. And to go from there to like where we are today is insane. You know, that was just like 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, you figure I'm 34 now. So 20 years ago, I was 14. So you figure it's 14 years old. What do you think kids were doing at 14? So, Miller High Life, I mean, that was kind of our go-to. It was the champagne and beers. I mean, what could go wrong with the champagne and beer? I mean, don't get me wrong. There were definitely many of nights that we crushed, cases of Milwaukee's best. You know, that we did not shy away from what was cheap. I mean, you're young. You have 10 bucks in your pocket. What do you think? It's not going for a 6-pack of good craft beer. It's going for a 30-pack of let's go party beer. So,
how long have you had your brewery now? You're 2 years into it. Is that right?
I'm going on 2 years of holding the lease. A full year of operation. I mean, you can argue it's about a year and a half of production, but technically a full year of being in operation, you know, open to the public and stuff. Definitely learned a lot. It's definitely been an interesting, bumpy road. I mean, gee, you know, talk about worst timing of all. You know, when we opened up in June, you know, we pretty much missed all the primary events for the craft brew industry. So, you know, moving forward, you're like, hey, okay, well, there's maybe one or two, but lo and behold, a bunch of other ones popped up. So we didn't really move forward with really obtaining a offsite license. It was just mainly, you know, trying to save, you know, money here and there, and figured since we missed all the events, you know, what's the purpose? So we didn't really get it. So obviously we did apply August and never obtained it. until, you know, the beginning of this year, which that was a headache. But, you know, now we have it and now there's no events. So it's kind of like, gee, we spent money for nothing. But not to say I can't go to farmers markets and stuff like that and still sell my product, which I totally plan on doing. It just kind of turned into, well, we missed all events this year yet again. This was kind of the whole game plan this year was really building more of a name for ourselves, you know, getting ourselves out there, you know, showcasing what we have to the general public, you know, more so than saying on social media, saying, hey, we're open, come try our beer, you know, here's some pictures, and that's the best you get. So with events, people can go and taste your product. They get intrigued. Some people, you know, you may find some possible investors or anything like that that want to help, you know, scale, you know, upscale your production and what you got going on. So, but yeah, it's one of those things where we missed all that, and with COVID and everything, it's kind of ruined everything. And then with that said, you know, trying to reopen is also a challenge. I mean, we're definitely looking forward to reopening this weekend for Father's Day. But, you know, I definitely still have my, you know, my concerns, you know, as a business owner and dealing with the general public and stuff. So hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully everything will go smoothly and, you know, we'll be able to keep everything nice and clean and you know, make the public happy. Hell, trying to get back into the swing of things because, you know, definitely want to try to, you know, excel this business and try to make, you know, go at it. Frederick has such an amazing group of breweries already. You know, it's not easy showing up to the doorsteps of what we already have. You know, you really got to put a lot of work into it. So it's a lot of fun. I definitely enjoy it. So we'll see what the future has. Who knows if, you know, if things don't work out here, doesn't mean I can't go somewhere else and excel at what they've got and really try to, you know, improve, you know, continue improving the industry, you know, just what I've always wanted to do in general. But we, you know, I had the opportunity to take a stab at owning my own brewery. It was a passion of mine. It was a dream of mine. You know, years ago when we started getting into the homebrewing aspect of making beer ourselves, you know, our friends, you know, the three of us, we all were like, hey, how cool would it be to, you know, open up a brewery? Again, at the time, we didn't have so many breweries. So there was the, you know, different ideas of doing little boutiques, like taproom boutiques and stuff. Licensing today was not what it was back then. So, you know, there was definitely limitations. Some counties were a little bit more lenient than others. So we were definitely looking into it. There was actually one opportunity that we were taking a stab at. Unfortunately, that fell through. Three of us were pretty thankful that it did fall through, because as any great friendship, you don't really go into business with your friends. It's tough to do that. Thankfully, we didn't, you know, things didn't move forward.
Are you working all by yourself now, or do you have any partners or anyone working with you?
It's just primarily me. My whole goal this year was, you know, again, to showcase and try to, you know, build this business up so that way I can try to employ other employees, especially like brew house staff. Love to get somebody in here that can do cellar work. I enjoy the brewing aspect. I do enjoy cellar work, but cellar work in itself is a whole nother, a whole nother animal. Just keeping watch over fermenters, you know, cleaning tanks, you know, so definitely a lot of work. 16-hour days.
So how long have you been closed now due to COVID?
Obviously, we were closed to the public and only selling to go like literally the weekend after our grand opening. when we first opened, we didn't really plan. We thought about doing the grand opening, but between different months and things that were going on, that didn't work out. So we finally decided, hey, March 14th, you know, we'll go ahead and do this again. We'll do St. Patty's celebration, you know, grand opening. You know, luck of the Irish, you know, go figure. We did the grand opening, and then that's when Hogan said, hey, everything has to shut down after that weekend. So, you know, we were closed to the public. And then right around Memorial Day, I think about the weekend or so before Memorial Day, because sales were down, you know, our business was not really where I was hoping it was going to be. So I just kind of took the decision and said, we're just going to close indefinitely, you know, until further notice, primarily because just trying to focus on some other things. Since I'm in here by myself all the time, I get some help pouring beer, you know, here and there, but there was a certain point where I just had to take a pause, you know, going at it harder for the last year and a half. You know, I was taking its toll. So I just kind of said, hey, let's take a break. No, nothing, you know, we're not opening up anytime soon. Of course, we make that announcement, and then a week later, boom, outside seating is allowed. So it was like, oh, great timing.
You just did a lot of expansions inside, right? You had moved your taps, you had worked on the back seating area. So I know you were excited to get people inside, because it seems like you just did that right before your grand opening, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, we spent, so 2 weeks before our celebration of our grand opening, we took a pause and said, hey, we're going to do some work inside, do some painting, do a little this, a little that, you know, make the place a little bit more inviting, which, you know, was our goal to begin with. You know, going into this, funding was limited. So all the funding primarily went into the brew house. Operating a brewery and getting started, you know, beer comes first. That's your primary goal. You make the product, everything else will come with it. So that was my main focus. Make great beer, everything else will come with it. So the front of house, what was kind of lacking any kind of pizzazz or any kind of vibe. So we, you know, at the time just said, let's just throw some paint up, get the taps on the wall. Get some people in here, see what the feedback was. Feedback started to become positive, more and more positive. So then that was, okay, so next step, what are we going to do inside? What can we do to maximize efficiency, capacity, and things like that, and make it a little bit more comfortable and inviting? Thanks to Mike Pfister, who's a really great interior designer, by the way. He's helped redo the interior work over at Midnight Run, which, you know, they did such a phenomenal job over there. That already pretty much told me, hey, this is pretty much the right guy. Talked with him. He came up with a really cool idea. And so we ran with it. So yeah, we did all that work and shut her down.
So what are you doing now? I know you're getting ready to reopen. Are you going to be doing indoor seating this weekend?
So obviously, since they are allowing indoor 50% capacity, that's kind of what we were hoping. I know that everybody else is doing additional outside patio seating. You know, unfortunately, it's just, I have to be honest, funding's just not available to do that. We don't have the ability to get picnic tables, to do the fencing, you know, the whole nine yards. It's just there's nothing there. I pretty much have what I have at this point. So, you know, once that announcement came, it was like, all right, great. I can work with this, because at least that way I can have some seating. Because my outside patio, at best, I can do two tables out there. So two four tops, eight people. I you know, that's not going to do anything. So, even though I was looking into different ideas for outside patio seating, you know, there's a grassy area out back, underneath the tree, which would be kind of a great idea. And we were focusing on that, but since right before we were getting ready to submit all that, that's when Hogan announced 50% indoor capacity. I just kind of said, you know what, since there really is no money, and, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe I'll use a reopening to-go sales weekend to maybe try to supplement something to get the fencing going, or, you know, and implement some kind of patio seating, more so than what we have now. But it was like, nah, let's do the indoor seating. Let's just stop it there. Maybe we'll look into doing some additional patio seating, but, you know, we'll see.
Are you anticipating that Crowler sales will be pretty good?
You know, that's a good question. I have no idea what it's going to do now. I want to say yes, but then again, obviously, since, you know, all my sales for the last 2 months were to go only, I don't know what this weekend's going to bring. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, just an overall still higher percentage of to-go sales than what I normally would in the past, or if it's going to be kind of half and half. Yeah, I really don't know. But hey, the more the merrier.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. I mean, I'm personally not ready to go out anywhere indoors where I can't be wearing a mask. You know, just watching these numbers going back up, and it seems like people are just bored, so they've decided COVID's over. And I don't know. I mean, I love going out to breweries, I love going out to restaurants, but just putting myself inside a building with a bunch of strangers not wearing masks, I'm not feeling it yet. Like, I'm going to continue to buy Crowlers and drink them at my house.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I said, you know, before, I do have a level of concern, you know, as a business owner. And technically, I don't know what the numbers are like, you know, for our area.
I mean, they're saying Maryland is going down, or at least steady, but, you know, I'm more looking at places that have been open longer. I think if you look at places like Texas and South Carolina and places where they started doing it, you know, a little before, you know, their numbers aren't going down. We're not going down in the U.S. like they are in other countries where they had more lockdown. At least that's from what I'm seeing. And, you know, I don't know. I err on the side of caution. I don't feel the need to like go out and sit in a restaurant right now. Most of the places I'm fine getting takeout and eating at my house.
No, and I agree. You know, I will definitely support anybody who wants to still stay home. We'll sell anybody beer to go. Probably even consider setting up a tent outside. And in that way, people, you know, those who just don't feel comfortable coming inside and still want to, you know, grab and go, then, you know, we'll make it easier for them. You know, I can't say that I'm super excited about it. I think it's definitely coming a little bit too quick, you know, but then again, at the same time, unfortunately, thank you, Hogan, for not including small businesses for your mandate for, you know, keeping the light on, because that's definitely not the case. That only applies to residents. So unfortunately, you know, even though our business sales were down so low that it was starting to become a little questionable on whether or not certain things were going to get paid for month by month, and lo and behold, Comcast came in and cut the internet off because, you know, we were 2 months behind, and they were like, pay it or that was it, have a nice day kind of attitude. And it was just like, oh, really?
Which then affects your ability to sell beer, right? Because you needed the internet for your POS and all that.
Correct. Yeah. All transactions are done through the internet. Luckily, what we have, you know, the pads and stuff that we do have technically has cell phone service to it. So I can use it temporarily, but I can't base all my business off of using cell phone service. It's limited service. So, you know, there's only so far I can take it. It sounds like, luckily, with the collaboration that Michael at Idiom and that worked together with Uncapped, it appears as though that there might be some funding coming my way to help supplement some bills and stuff. So that's pretty incredible that they put that together. You know, nobody asked them to do it, and it was pretty phenomenal to see them do that, and to hear how much money they raised. I mean, it's pretty cool. So
That's really cool. So I think that speaks to like the beverage community here in Frederick. I mean, as a outsider, to me, it seems like it's a pretty tight knit community. I mean, is that what you're finding, that everyone's supportive and wants to help?
Oh yeah, no, hugely. This, you know, one of the main aspects of why I just went ahead, or why I followed through with opening up a brewery, was just seeing how much support that the community has for the brewery scene here. I mean, it's really incredible.
From a traditional business sense, I mean, you would think that people would want to see their competitors fail. You know, like if you went under, it would be better for other breweries in theory. But it seems like, you know, I mean, I know all these guys. Like Mike is fantastic. I love that they're so supportive. So it's good to hear that, you know, they all want to kind of help everyone survive this storm we're going through right now.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. You know, it's we've always had the mindset of a rising tide, you know, raises all boats. At the same time, Frederick, you know, for some reason has always been synonymous for beer. It's not like it happened overnight. It's a thing, but we are a beer community. And we love everything about it. So to see a brewery go down hits really deep, you know, with everyone. I mean, when House Cat, when they came out into the showcase, you know, at first, you know, I guess depending on who you are and who you talk to, I guess it's arguable on how much or what their quality product was. Personally, I thought that they had a great start, you know, kudos to them. It's not easy to start a brewery. So, you know, whatever they have, I'm sure that they'll improve, but go figure that their opening day, in fact, actually, the photo that they took for their grand opening, I was standing there in some ragged clothes trying to chip up the floor at the brewery that I'm standing in now. So, you know, I was in the middle of doing some work. So I was only in there for a brief moment. And at the same time, after that, really wasn't in there much. I really wasn't in and out of too many breweries, you know, just between work and everything else. So
there was definitely talk about like oversaturation of the market. I mean, we have so many breweries now, and, you know, I'm sure the conversation is always like, do we have too many and who's going to be the first to go and is it going to start to fall off? So I think when they closed, you know, is this a sign that we're going to start losing more and more breweries as the cream rises to the top?
Yeah, there's definitely that fear, especially where I'm at. You know, some of where I am also has to do with just kind of bad luck. But at the same time, you know, this is a business, so you really can't always put luck into account of it, because, you know, no matter what, there's always something that you technically could have done. I can't say that you can always plan for everything. I mean, you know, I can't say that everybody can plan for COVID-19, but at the same time, you know, as a brewery, your main focus is production and putting your product out there. We were never designed to be that way. It was never a production house. It was an in-house consumption on site. You know, that was it, with some occasional beer to go. The game plan in the next year or two was to hopefully open up a bigger production facility and move forward with that kind of game plan. But, you know, obviously with everything that we're dealing with here, who knows if that'll ever happen. At the same time, you know, it's hard to say what we have as a brewery or what our future holds as a brewery, just with where funding is and everything else. So, I mean, we'll see. We're still holding on. We're still here. Nobody told us to close. They just shut the internet off. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously nobody could plan for COVID. I think it's how you adapt and adjust to that. And, you know, at least you have the benefit of being a little smaller. So I think, you know, you can be nimble as long as you're someone who's creative and can think about, you know, how maybe you can pivot. We're all using the word pivot, right? But I do think that that's an applicable thing is, you know, can you change your business model or whatever? And that's what this podcast is focused on for the past almost 3 months now, is businesses that are, you know, finding ways to adapt to the current situation. Because if you don't adapt, you know, I don't know how anyone stays in business if they don't adapt right now.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. again, you know, Michael over at Idiom, he's again, a great guy. He's helped, you know, a lot of different things. He actually sold his original Crowler machine to us. I was in the market of looking for one. We had just picked that up maybe a month or two before COVID hit. So without that, we wouldn't be able to do anything. You know, there are options of taking kegs of beer over to different facilities, canning it on site, and then going forward with that. But, you know, then you got to talk about scheduling and getting it over, you know, shipping between back and forth. I've got a Honda Accord. I definitely can't fit any more than one or two full kegs of beer. So it's not, you know, the most realistic idea. Not that we couldn't make it possible and not that we couldn't make it work. But, you know, without the Crowler machine, we would totally be dead in the water.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if to-go's is all you're able to do, I mean, you need to be able to do that. Do people even use growlers anymore, like refillable growlers? It just seems so funny. You know, I used to take my glass growler into places and have them filled, and I don't even know. Do people do that anymore?
There are actually surprisingly some people that still do that. I was actually amazed at just, I'm not saying the number was large, but I'm just saying that there were some people that came in looking to get their growlers filled. And we had to kindly explain to them that, you know, unfortunately due to COVID, we're not doing any kind of exchanges. It's basically you order online, you come pick it up. There's no contact. So, you know, with anybody who is pouring beer, we wore, you know, face masks, gloves, and, you know, we did our best at trying to maintain any kind of spread. So, which the online service, that was a whole new thing. That was pretty cool to see all that play out. It works really well. I really enjoy it. Hopefully we'll be able to maintain that. I think it could be an additional improvement to sales in general and overall. You figure just like yourself, you're not really inclined to necessarily go sit out anywhere. However, you're, you know, more than welcome to order online. There's a food truck there. You can order online with them. You can pick up your food and your beer. You don't have to bother anybody.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was super easy because then you don't have to wait. You know, I've been to a lot of breweries where you go in and you stand at the bar and you wait for them to get your growler pulled together. I love that I could just go online, tell you what I want, pay for it online, and then just walk in and say, "Hey, Chris, I'm here for my beer," and you can just hand it to me and I just walk out and it takes like 3 seconds.
It's amazing. No, I love it. So hopefully, I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't maintain that one or keep it, but, you know, Maryland is funny.
Maryland is funny indeed. Are you allowed to do deliveries if you wanted?
Actually, yes, I am. Funny thing is, weird loophole in the system. Technically, there's really not much stopping me per se because of where my license is and things like that. So literally just fill up the back of my car and just show up like an ice cream truck and say, "Hey, I got beer to get, you know, beer for sale. Fill out this application and we'll get you going," which don't think I haven't thought about it.
Whatever it takes to pay the bills. So what do you have on tap now? Do you have any new beers for your reopening, or is it stuff that you had done and ready to go before? Like, what's your tap lineup look like?
So I wouldn't call it new stuff. I do have a restock of Ragged Misfortune, which is our New England IPA. It's amazing. It's delicious. It sells quicker than I can keep up with. What I'm actually really excited about, which I actually had to dump a batch prior because I just wasn't really happy with it. It wasn't great. So the first batch of Hefeweizen, it wasn't where I wanted to be. So now Now I've got one that I'm actually really happy with, very pleased. So this weekend I've got a Hefeweizen, but other than that, everything else will still be on tap. I've got a really good go-to Kolsch, our wedding grisette, which is a raspberry grisette, which, by the way, has started to take popular form. Manor Hill, I haven't tried it yet, but I can imagine it's probably very tasty. Just released a raspberry grisette barrel-aged version. So give that a try if you ever see it. I'm sure it's pretty tasty. But anyway, yeah, so our raspberry grisette, it's delicious. It's kind of the one of our most popular to-go sales prior to COVID-19. It kind of attunes to almost everybody's palate. It's fermented just like your normal style ale, but kind of with a saison yeast. And then all we do is douse it with a bunch of raspberries, tart it up. So it's just really got this nice balance to it. And it seems like it makes everybody happy. And then after that, there's our oatmeal stout. And then something that I was actually very, very proud of, which is the first time ever doing myself, a barrel-aged release on McClintock bourbon barrels. So we didn't really name it anything per se, just it's called our anniversary barrel-aged release. It came out for our anniversary. We were obviously going to have some kind of celebration, but you know, since our anniversary is June 1st and because of COVID-19, you know, we weren't able to really do anything. So it was just like, all right, well, we're just going to still release this, but we released it on Memorial Day weekend. So it was technically a weekend early, but it seemed to fit and a lot of people seemed to like it. I really do enjoy it. It's quite phenomenal. It's got a really decent amount of vanilla notes with the really nice caramel malty background. That's just, it's delicious.
I was really excited to try that and I didn't get one. So I'm looking forward to maybe being able to pick some of that up if there's some around.
Yes, we still have some of that. So you come see me, I got one for you. So we're anticipating hopefully a crowd this weekend. You know, we're excited. We're still a little leery about things, you know, but we're optimistic and hopeful that, you know, things will pan out just fine. We're going to do our best at, you know, maintaining a nice, good, clean environment. Weather looks like it may be pretty decent. So, you know, we'll try to keep our doors open, keep a good flow of fresh air flowing. You know, when we hosted our grand opening, you know, we didn't have the turnout that we were hoping, but we did have a pretty decent turnout. And even then, a lot of people were very hesitant on coming out, but people still came out and a lot of our regulars came out and it seemed like they still kept coming back for more beer to go. So fingers crossed, everything's going to go just fine.
People around here definitely have been going out for food and drink from what I've seen the past couple of weeks. So I think you should be prepared to have a pretty decent weekend, at least to goes, if not drinking in there. So yeah, we'll see. I'll follow up with you and hopefully I'll be in to pick up a crowler to go sometime soon. So to all our listeners, this has been the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. As always, you can find us at chefswithoutrestaurants.com and .org and on all social media platforms at Chefs Without Restaurants. Thanks and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please let us know. We can be reached at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.